Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of The Sample Hour. You are in for a treat because our monthly visits with author, Renaissance man, blog writer, owner of the website and blog of Two Minds, my good friend, Mr. Charles Hugh Smith. How you doing, Charles?
Great, Drew. Good to be back on your show.
Oh, man, it's always a pleasure for me. We were just talking about off the air. We haven't talked in a little bit. We've both been pretty busy. Something we always talk about, and our conversations have helped me focus my energies when it comes to this. I mean, so, you know, I initially had you on because of your most recent book. And if you haven't bought it, you need to go to Amazon and buy it. It's Get a Job, Build a Real Career, Defy a Bewildering Economy, which I always seem to have struggled saying the title. But it's a great book. So please buy it on Kindle or buy the hardcover. I have both. Something that we talk about a lot, and I've asked you about, like, you know, investing and everything else like that. A lot of times it's like, so people have these ideas and, you know, they want to do this or they want to do that, but there's always like something getting in the way of them, you know, getting on a limb or stepping outside their comfort zone to do it. And recently something that I just kind of came across, which a good friend introduced to me, was Maslow's triangle. So for anybody that doesn't know what Maslow's triangle is, basically Maslow's triangle is just the, it's, I don't know why I'm here. Do you want to see?
Yeah. Well, I guess I just looked it up on the web, you know,
I had it pulled up,
me to the basic ideas. And I guess it's called a hierarchy of needs. You know, that human nature is that we satisfy our needs in this sort of triangle or pyramid shape, where the bottom one is the basic needs, the material needs of like food, water, you know, shelter, you know, sex, etc. And then safety is the next one, which we could call it security. And then like social needs, like we're social animals, right? So we need a social circle. We need friends. We need that kind of social contact and security. And then the fourth rung, or as we approach the top of the pyramid, is self-esteem, and also not just self-esteem, but esteem within your social circle. And then the top of the pyramid, or the triangle, is self-realization, which is like being able to express yourself and be yourself fully, as without all the constraints of what, you know, what we've been told and what our culture sort of puts into us as in our childhood. And so that requires self-knowledge. No one can be self-actualized by just kind of like saying, oh, well, whatever, I can do whatever I want. That's not self-actualization. Self-actualization is, here's my strengths, here's my weaknesses, here's my role in my family, here's the struggles that I've had in life, here's the obstacles I've put in my own way, and all that stuff. That's the process of self-actualization.
Yeah, and my apologies there. I had it pulled up on my iPad here, and that image went away. So I was like, oh, no, where's my reference? So thank you for stepping in there, Charles. So that's the whole thing. And like when I look at this, you know, I think it's possible to have pieces of each. But, you know, to really kind of just what you were talking about, focus on the top. Like, so if you really want to focus on harnessing your creativity or your problem solving skills, you know, you really have to go back down and say, and kind of start from the bottom and keep working your way up and say, okay, are my needs being met? You know, am I really safe? Do I feel safe of, you know, my employment, my resources? And you know, and then it comes back to the top and being honest with yourself, like accepting the facts. You know, what is my role in my family? You know, like I'm getting older, like I realize that, hey, I'm not a child anymore. Now I'm like, you know, I'm a figure of the family. Like I'm a man in my family. Like I'm influential in my family versus just being some kid who's going to college and trying to find his way. Now I've found my way and other people are paying attention. And so it's like, it's for me, it's been this psychological change. And, you know, I'm about to turn 30 this upcoming year. And it's been really like just kind of putting everything together. So and to kind of go back to what I was saying. So why I wanted to focus on this today. And, you know, so recently I've been really making a lot of improvements in my life. You know, I've gotten, you know, I've surrounded myself with good people. I have, you know, some strategies for my future. I have an idea of where I want to be in the future. I have a decent income or a good income so I can put aside money. But then it was like, you know, well, what else could I do? Well, my health. So recently I just cut out a bunch of foods and I've been trying to you know, clean my body up, because, you know, the healthier I am, the easier it is for me to think. And I think, you know, a lot of people it's tough. Like a lot of people, you know, they're stuck in like the, you know, the safety and physiological, and it's hard for them to get kind of above there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, Drew. And I, what my first thoughts in listening to you were that how the whole Maslow pyramid is impacted by consumerism, you know, and consumerism is kind of like the air we breathe. We don't even think about it. We don't notice it. And yet it's a very sort of special and sort of distorting type of culture, you know, that if you went back in time in America or in other cultures, consumption was not the core of everyone's life. You know, it wasn't like, well, what can we consume and buy today? You know, that we didn't shape our identity and our esteem. And really, the whole Maslow pyramid is now shaped around buying stuff and wearing stuff and getting tats and, you know, everything that's external, if you will, and that can be bought, as opposed to the sort of self-realization is more like a process of going inward and discovering who you are and living that out. And yeah, sure, we have consumption needs, like we have to eat and, you know, we need shelter and all that stuff. But so I want to talk a little bit and elicit your views on how consumption sort of distorts all this stuff. Like if we look at the material needs, and let's take food as a good example, it's one of the world's largest industries. I just was, my mind was just blown recently I always thought it was like illicit drugs and then maybe energy. But those are huge industries, but food is right up there with hundreds of billions of dollars are spent globally on food. Pretty much like, you know, energy, I think even more than energy, and right up there with illicit drugs. So so food is a big deal, right? It's a big deal economically. And it's a big, it's a huge influence on our lives. And the Chinese saying, as you know, Chinese medicine and Indian medicine go way back. It's disease comes through the mouth. And what that means is not microorganisms, it means what we eat. And so if we eat really poorly, we're basically making ourselves sick. And so consumerism plays into this because it encourages the worst part of our human nature, the adolescent child within each of us who just wants the satisfaction of the snack food right now, you know, the salty, the sweet, the fatty. You know, those are programmed into our minds because those were scarce commodities in the hunter-gatherer world. Sweetness was fairly rare, and fat was rare, and so was salt. All those things were extremely scarce, and so when you got some of that, it was like we were primed, you know, to consume as much of that as we could because it was scarce, and you had to grab it when you could, and then you didn't have any for a long time. So now we have all that stuff in abundance, and so it's used nowadays to sell us stuff.
Yeah.
Because we can't resist. I mean, like I just once a year, and I'll tell you a personal story. My wife and I, we treat ourselves to one of those big cartons of like salted cashews. You know, it's kind of like our holiday treat, because we'll vacuum up the whole 3 pounds or whatever it is in a few days. You know, and it's like, yeah, nuts are good. They're nutritious. The salt is fine. It tastes great. It's very fatty. But I mean, if I had that stuff around all the time, I'd weigh like 200 instead of, you know, 173, you know, and that wouldn't be good for me. Not, you know, and so not to mention chips, ice cream. I mean, the list of foods that have these triggers, these chemical triggers that we can't resist, they're in abundance. They're everywhere. And so it becomes a weird kind of distortion of the pyramid we're talking about. To control your diet, you have to go way up the pyramid to self-actualization and esteem, you know, in order to control that base need for food. And that's what I see you doing in changing your diet so radically, is you've gone way up the pyramid to self-actualization and self-knowledge, and then you're able to control the basic drive and need for food.
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting. And a couple things that I thought was interesting too, when you were talking about food is the number one industry, and you thought it would be drugs or energy. And it's like, you know, for humans, food, it's like food has become a drug and energy. Like, it's like,
yeah, with
all the stuff that's put in it. I mean, there's like so many different addictive qualities. I mean, it's just like the way that artificial sweeteners and trans fats and just all this stuff that's and it's all out of convenience. It's just like what you were saying about consumerism, and it's all connected, because it's, you know, it's all about convenient. Like, you know, the most empowering thing has been making my own food. And we kind of talked a little bit before when we were talking about Thug Kitchen and the spaghetti sauce you made. And you know, it's been like this really rewarding thing, because it's like I was like, you know, I need to have a better relationship with my food. And it's like, you know, when I go out now, or if I drive near, and I'm actually surprised, because like what I'm doing is called Whole 30, and there's this whole community of people that have been doing it for a while, and they have like this list of how you're gonna feel, and I don't really feel a lot of those lists. Like, at first, it was really hard for me, just because I was going through like some withdrawal for sugar, wheat, and gluten, and soy, because one of those ingredients are pretty much in any food that's in the internal aisles of the grocery store. And I've seen a bunch of documentaries about this, and like, because everybody, I think, wants to make it into this conspiracy, but I just don't think that's what it is. I think it has a lot more to do with greed and people just trying to make money. I mean, it's always easy to, and it's easy to see people get caught up, because like, just like what you were saying, like consumerism touches on this adolescent part of us. But I mean, and I think it comes from an adolescent part of us too. Like, you know, I don't feel like making, you know, I don't want to make my own food. I just want to go have fun and all this other stuff. And so it's been an interesting thing. And so, yeah, to go back to like the whole self-actualized thing. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was something that I knew I needed to do. Like, you know, I'm a big guy. I'm about 6'3". I weigh about I weighed when I started, and I had my blood work done with a doctor before I started. I weighed about 295 pounds. My blood levels were fine, but I'm tall, and gravity isn't kind to tall people over time. And especially if you're carrying around extra weight, I mean, I could already see my hips and having hip and back issues. And I'm like, I need to do something. I mean, I'm going to be 30 soon, and I better act now until before I'm getting these symptoms rather than when it actually happens. So I was kind of thinking forward. Like, I was thinking about this image of myself in the future, and how I want to see myself, you know, whether it be how successful I am or, you know, having successful multiple streams of income. And it was kind of like, you know, I don't want to be, you know, because, you know, to go back to the triangle, like there's plenty of rich people that have stupid money, but they don't have a good relationship with family. They don't have all the parts of that triangle, because they're still missing essential needs. I mean, they might, just because you have a lot of money doesn't mean you're necessarily successful internally. I mean, there's a lot of greed going on. There's a lot of other insecurities that are going on. I mean, I don't necessarily know what their motivations are, but so I think to kind of put it all in perspective, you know, and you wrote a really good blog post recently too about like the, the couple that really stood out was the one about corporate America, which we can get into a little bit later. And, but also, you know, being a minimalist. And I think like that aspect of, you know, being a minimalist is like, you know, it goes back to the triangle and this kind of fight against consumerism, like what you were talking about, because it's all about being, you know, that being that whole, or like, I guess like that overall well-being is going to come from within. It's nothing external that you can buy. Doesn't matter how many computers, tablets, cars, houses you have. I mean, what really matters is, you know, what you have internally, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, Drew, and I think that you're changing your diet. I think it's worth talking a little bit about how that affects every layer of the triangle. That, you know, it's like, okay, your basic needs for nutrition, you're serving that a lot better, right?
Absolutely.
And then within the safety, then actually health is the essential to safety, right? I mean, you know, if you're unhealthy, then you're at risk, right? So you're improving your health. And then within your social circle, then I think that, you know, if diet and your body shape and size, how you feel about yourself, who you hang out with, all, of course, that's completely related to food, right? I mean, because once you start hanging out with other kinds of people that eat a little better than maybe previous circles or other social circles, then, you know, you start changing your social life a little bit too, because you're no longer hanging out at In-N-Out Burger or whatever, you know? and then your self-esteem goes way up, regardless of whether you've changed your body shape or anything else. I think your esteem goes up because you're finally in control of your life.
Yeah.
And then self-actualization, you start learning about what you like to cook. You start learning you have some talent or skills in certain parts of that whole process. And you start feeling a lot better about yourself, not only from control, but because you're learning stuff. And, you know, it's like a path of growth.
Yeah, it's been interesting because my roommate and I both drank a lot of soda. Like, we just liked soda. And, you know, and it wasn't like... And I thought, and we kind of came down to, you know, a lot of it has to do with the fizzy water. So then we were like, well, what could we do? So I was already done with soda, but I was like, well, let me get some. I went to, I had to go to this work function and I had to be at a bar, and I was like proud of myself because I'm like, you know what? I told the bartender, hey, I don't drink anymore. Could you just get me club soda? And the guy was so nice about it. He was like, oh, good for you, man. And like really encouraging. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. The guy would always like go out of his way to make sure I had this soda water. So then I was thinking, I was like, you know what? I need to add this into the mix at home. So then we went and we got some soda water. And then we were like, well, this can get expensive. So then we started looking on YouTube University, one of our favorite things. And this dude has this cool rig underneath his sink. He gets this restaurant grade CO2 thing. And he's concocted this little device to make his own fizzy water.
Because
the soda machine, and it wasn't too expensive, and I looked, and my dad and a couple other people could help me construct this, but and it was just kind of like, you know, why don't I just, like, why, like, if you go to get, like, a soda machine or something like that, it's super expensive, and it's not really worth it. It tastes like crap. So then we were like, okay, so let's add to this. So my roommate really likes Sprite, so I was like, why don't we just start using lemon and lime to make our own stuff? So then while my buddy, who like I kind of got researching this stuff, he starts looking at this, and then we're like, wow, lemon and lime are like superfoods. If you just drink lemon and lime juice every day, you get all these health benefits. And it's like the more I kind of do this, the more like just worlds are just opened up to me. That it's like, you know, it's not that you're being lied to necessarily, but it's like everything that's good for you has been replaced with something that's convenient. And kind of robs your reward system, like a Sprite. It's filled with sucrose and apparently lemon and lime juice, or I know lemon juice for sure. Like, you never want to get it out of the little container because it's like the terpenes, or I forget. I think that's what they're called. There's plenty of fake ones that imitate the way lemon tastes. So it's just been like this. And it's always about convenience, I'm sure. I'm sure it's like, hey, it's cheaper if we just did this in a lab versus buying good lemons and making lemon juice. So it's like, it's been interesting, Charles, for sure. It's always unpeeling another layer of the onion, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think you've described something really critical. It's maybe the heart of what we're talking about here is that the convenience food kind of hijacks our reward system.
Yeah.
And we lose control. And then I really like your description of, you know, like, okay, how can we make our own Sprite, you know? And actually, I was thinking, wow, that's a great business. Or if I had a cafe or something, I think you could sell a lot of that. Like, this is actually homemade Sprite. And it tastes so much better. And if you wanted to add some sweetener, you could put some honey in it or whatever.
Yeah.
But that would be a pretty pretty unique item for somebody to start selling. This is the real stuff, and it tastes so much better than the fake food junk that we've gotten used to.
Yeah, and there's a big market for this too. I mean, if you think about, and there's a reason why Whole Foods is so successful. I mean, people go there, they spend $80 just on fruits and vegetables, and they're happy about it. I mean, to give people, I mean, we talked about it a while ago, like authenticity, to bring authenticity, like I feel like that's a big deal. Like, I think we've talked a lot about like locally sourced food on the last podcast we did. And I think like it all goes back to like people, I think like in it, and it's just kind of like how we always talk about it. It's getting, things are really getting better. Like, there's a lot of crazy things going on in the world with Cuba and Russia and the oil, but there's still a lot of positive things. I mean, I still think, you know, it's good to be aware, but it's like, you know, people's consciousness are changing. People realize that more and more, I feel like that they're being lied to. And I think, you know, even like, it's like, even in our food, we're lied to. If you just look at the ingredients, you can see what it's saying it is, isn't actually what it is. Like, if you look at any, one thing that drove me nuts was any can of tuna. There's soy in like pretty much every can of tuna. And I was like, why is there soy in tuna? Like, tuna tastes delicious on its own, but I had to go to like Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and pay $1.50 to $2 for a can of tuna. But it was okay because that's what that's what I want to do. But it was just like when I started doing this, like it's like the frustrating thing is that finding foods that have what I'm looking for. But I think, you know, like in general, though, if just like what you were saying, it's a good business. Like, people like fizzy drinks, and I think people like good tasting food that's authentic, and it doesn't have a bunch of added bullshit to it. And I think, you know, I don't know, it's exciting.
Yeah, well, Drew, I was curious. I know you've been on your new diet, the Whole30, for a couple of weeks now, and. You know, it's a personal thing. You know, individually, we all react to changes a little differently. And I know some people, they suddenly, it's like a revolution in their lives to get rid of wheat, gluten, and dairy. You know, that they, yeah. Their congestion goes away, their mind clears. I mean, it's like a miracle, right? Other people, they don't really have much of a response. And it doesn't mean it's not a good thing, but it's sort of like it's an individual. I mean, each of us is a unique physical being, right? So, and we have a different way of reacting to foods because not just because of our genetic heritage, but because of our microbiome, they call it. You know, that we digest our food with the help of hundreds or even thousands of different types of bacteria that are like our internal ecosystem. And so it turns out that the family and the region that we came from sort of shapes our microbiome. And of course, we the worse we eat, you know, if we're just eating garbage, then it harms our microbiome, and we lose the a lot of the bacteria that would be helpful. So that's a long way of coming to the question. How have you felt after a couple weeks?
Well, the first week I didn't feel good. That's for sure. The first week, I mean, like I seriously felt similar to when I first stopped consuming a lot of alcohol. Because I don't consume a lot of alcohol. I didn't beforehand. Like I did like a couple years ago, but when I cut down, like, I mean, like there's a couple podcasts, I haven't released yet before this episode. Like my mental clarity definitely wasn't there. Like it was definitely like, it was like, I was kind of going up a hill and then I knew as soon as I came down, it was like, okay, I'm going to be able to think clearly again, which I feel really good right now. So at first, you know, it was weird. So at first, like I was hungry all the time. So I always made sure to have snacks and healthy snacks. So one of my go-tos like was celery and like cashew butter, almond butter when I was sitting at work. Or I just packed like some extra like I've been getting grass-fed meat or hormone-free, GMO-free like meat, no sugar added. And so like I'd have some extra just for a snack in the afternoon. I put something else that helped to kind of curb my appetite was ghee in my coffee. So ghee is something that clarified butter is something you can have. So there's really good fats in it. So for anybody that doesn't know, ghee is like, it's Indian, but it's like a special, it's like grass-fed ghee. So it's like grass-fed butter, but there's no casein morphine in it. So there's that, the casein is what, like the opioid peptide in dairy, that's been removed. So that's been pretty good. So it took me a while to really get through it. And then like I got sick during like the whole process, but I usually when I'm sick, like I can't think or anything like that, but I actually could still think really clearly. I just didn't feel good. So I still went into work. And so what I did was I just drank a bunch of lemon and lime juice with water, and man, that made me feel better most of the time. Like I don't like taking like I'm really kind of crazy, Charles. I'd never like taking antibiotics if I don't have to, or over the counter medicine if I don't have to. Like I think we as a culture really abuse it. So I feel really good. So it's been like this really rewarding journey. My girlfriend's been super helpful too. She's the one that kind of got me onto it. She had lost 40 pounds from doing it before and just felt a lot better. And you know, a lot. So it was just kind of like she'd really been helpful, and really like it's nice because we kind of hold each other accountable, which makes that easier too, and it brings us closer together as well. So it's been really rewarding. I guess like that's, even if like I'm not like I don't, because like I said, weight's not peeling off me or anything yet. Like next 30 days, I'm gonna start getting in the gym. Like it's just, I wanted to focus on my food first and then I'm going to start working out more. But it's mainly been like huge deposits in my emotional bank account, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And then I think it's really critical that you mention your girlfriend's support and your roommate, because I was going to ask you how your colleagues at work are responding to this, because, you know, some people can give you kind of like they can be kind of jokingly critical, but they're actually trying to be supportive of you. And then other people can actually be like, oh, man, that's like you're really weird, you know, and being very critical in a mean-spirited way.
Well, the good news is my colleagues at work already think I'm weird, so that wasn't a problem. Like, I'm really private at work, and like there's always this running joke at work that like I'm either – at first, it was because I was so private and I'd worked with these guys at another place before and I wasn't. I was this big party animal and everybody knew my business. And then when that changed, it was like an interesting dynamic. So they had to adjust to that. So then the joke was that I was part of a secret terrorist cell. And that was like, that was really funny because I have this big beard. And then the next thing now is this older guy at work who sits around me. He's probably in his mid-40s, and he's like, you don't really have to work here, do you, Drew? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you know, I just picture you being independently wealthy. You get dropped off here by your butler. And it was like this joke, and I'm like, man, these jokes are getting better. But it was rewarding because it's like, you know, so that's, it's good that I'm kind of like giving, because that's, I mean, yeah, that'd be great. Like, I don't want to work there. I want to be able to like go in my director's office at work and tell her why I didn't want to work there anymore and why I don't need to work there anymore. Like that's my ultimate goal. So I'm like, well, I must be doing something right. So then it's like, so when I started doing the food thing, like I'd flirted with eating healthy before, but I also was a huge like fan of food trucks that we'd get. We'd get like a new food truck every day at work. So I was always like, man, I want to try this food. So I got like, people started following me going to the food truck. And then when I stopped going to the food truck, that was the biggest thing, was people like, come on, go to the food truck. I'm like, nah, man, I can't. I'm doing this thing. And people were actually pretty respectful. And then when they saw me not drinking alcohol, and then they just saw me just taking it more and more serious, it's like, at first people are going to test you because they naturally, I mean, that's just kind of how things work. You know, you're going to make a change. And whenever you make a change internally, you're going to be tested externally. That's just something I've always noticed. And so, but nobody was ever really, really rude or anything. Like my one friend, if they are, it's usually because they know they should be making changes and it's kind of scary for them. And, so there was like dietary pressure. Like this dude made some homemade chili, and I don't think he listens. So, but if he does, I'm sorry, man, I didn't eat your chili. I put it in a container. I just took it cause I didn't want to offend him. And it was like he was like an older guy, and he was really persistent about it. And I was like, okay. And I took a bowl and I stuck it in my Tupperware container and I pretended like I ate it so I wouldn't offend this guy at work. Eventually I'll tell him that I didn't eat it, but it just, I don't really know the guy personally. So it was like one of those things, and I didn't want to offend him. So that's one thing I wish I would have handled differently, Charles, if that makes sense.
Well, I don't know, because, you know, people, you know, our friends don't eat quite as carefully as we do, you know, which is, I think that's pretty standard. Unless you know a lot of cancer survivors, because, you know, that's one of the things that when people get cancer of various types, you know, there's often, there's a school of thought, let's put it that way, that diet, you know, sort of either helps or hinders cancers, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't control it. Like you can't, you know, guarantee you're going to be cancer free because of all the environmental issues, you know, that we live with as well, and stress and genetics and a lot of other things. But so you'll find that people who've survived cancer, who've gotten past their surgery and so on, are often vegetarian or have really cleaned up their diet. You know, because they go, wow, I almost died because, you know, I couldn't control what I was eating and my internal stress level. And of course, stress and food are related, right? Anyways, my point is that that people give us like Safeway cakes and stuff like that. Just, it's just garbage, right? And I mean, I have a sweet tooth, so I'm all for like homemade brownies and stuff, you know. But and cookies and things that you make yourself, then you can control the ingredients and you know, cut back the sugar and use like, you know, organic flour and a lot of other things you can do if you're going to make something that's like a dessert. So we just like take it home and then throw it away. And you know, it's like too bad, you know, it's all been recycled. But you know, it's fine because there's no point in hurting people's feelings, and we're just not going to eat what other people eat. And
yeah, and sometimes too, if they're not respectful of what you're telling them, or they're not listening, then you just take it and then you just throw it away. So it's just one of those things.
Well, I think it's really important too that your girlfriend and you are like of the same mind, because I'm sure you've seen it. I've seen it where a guy and a gal get together. The guy is like, you know, meat and potatoes type of guy. The girl was really careful about her diet and, you know, both for her figure and also because she wanted to be healthy and all that stuff. And then what happens is then she dumps her diet. He doesn't change his, you know. She starts making pork chops and macaroni and cheese and all this stuff, you know, and it's all like, hey, wait a minute, girl, how you're supposed to influence him, not like totally revert to this, like, you know, total like carbo
high saturated fat. They're probably, you know, like cooking their stuff in vegetable oil and all that stuff.
Yeah. But I also think, you know, you're going through something that I think for most of us is pretty radical. You know, in other words, like cutting out like the core of the American diet is difficult, you know, because as you say, so much stuff has soy in it, has trans fats, it's got gluten, it's got wheat, it's got dairy, it's got corn in it. So that's a real challenge. But I just want to speak a little bit to, you know, the idea that even with moderation, like even if you're at the food truck or, you know, we're going out with friends or whatever, there's always choices we can make to minimize, you know, the bad stuff and increase the good stuff. You know, like it's just simple things, you know, like swapping out, ordering a salad and or coleslaw instead of the French fries, you know, it's just like simple stuff like that. And so it's difficult is what I'm saying to navigate, you know, the convenience and the lack of information we have about the food that's being prepared for us or given to us, you know? And so we that navigation doesn't have to be perfect is what I'm saying to yield a lot of great rewards.
Correct. Yeah. And that's the truth. I don't know if I'm going to stay this extreme. I feel like I am just because I really enjoy cooking. Like now I get a lot of enjoyment. Like we have another potluck coming up and I was looking up like good ingredients. I found some like healthy guacamole I can make. And I think like, I really just kind of enjoy cooking and I never realized that I did. Like I don't really cooked since this cooking class in high school and I was pretty good at it, but then I was just lazy. And then it was like, you know, it's funny because it's like when I lost things on that back to Maslow's triangle, like different feelings, like social, like, you know, more basic needs. It's like, I couldn't really think about what I was good at and like something that we've hinted on. So now that it's like, you know, I've been arranging my life in a certain way so I can, you know, be in like really push for that self-actualization that it's like, you know, I can cook, I can do this. And I'm telling myself a lot more of what I can do instead of what I can't do. And I feel like a lot of people kind of get stuck in that. But yeah, I mean, you know, you cut out French fries, cut out deep fried foods. But a lot of times too, like I like eating meat if you're getting like hormone pushed meat, there's tons of toxins in the fat. It's not, you know, it's a lot of risk. So I try to stay with, you know, grass fed. I wish I could actually hunt and kill or buy a butchered cow or something like that, that where I knew exactly where that food came from, but I'm not quite to that point yet. But I think, you know, if people want to make changes in their lives, I mean, you know, you start out small. Like my roommate's not making these big changes, extreme changes like I am, but we're working on, you know, little steps. I mean, most people, you only have so much willpower. And you can't push it. I mean, there's a reason why I'm not trying to be in the gym and get my diet right all at the same time, because I've tried it hundreds of times and I always fail. So I think it's just, you know, taking steps. I mean, you know, look at that triangle and say, okay, do I have these needs met? Do I have this need met? Do I have this? Do I have that? And then, you know, keep working your way up. I mean, I think that's a good guide. You know, I don't know Maslow personally, so I mean, I'm not judging him. Like, you know, a lot of times people might try to discredit things people have done that could have good qualities to them just because of who they were. So I haven't done a lot of research on Maslow personally, so I'm sure he's got some skeletons in the closet, but he's a man and he's human, so most of us do. But anyways, I think it's been rewarding, and I'm excited for just a lot of things, because like I've made so many improvements, and it's like, okay, so now what else can I learn? Like, you know, my friends and I, we want to go probably buy a house and flip a house, and I think, you know, and that's like exciting too. Like what can I learn? Maybe I can become a handy guy. Right now I'm really not. Like, I'm good with technology stuff, but I'm not good with like furnaces or plumbing or electricity or anything like that. So it's like, it's always like it's just part of a journey. It's always part of like sharpening the saw and becoming more and more of a, I guess, like a whole all around person, I guess, or Renaissance kind of person, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that, the more that we know how to do, then the more self-sufficient we feel, the more empowered we feel, then we feel safer, you know. And then generally, the more you learn, and then your social circle reflects that, and you meet more people, And then your esteem goes up because you feel like, hey, I can handle life better now. And then, so yeah, everything feeds into the Maslow triangle, you know, in terms of increasing your skill set and knowledge. But I wanted to ask you, what kinds of things are you cooking or that you're enjoying cooking? Because you mentioned Thug Kitchen. And it's funny because, you know, there's so much good stuff on YouTube. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And, you know, my wife wanted to make, she's Asian American, so she wanted to make kimchi, you know, this Korean dish of pickled cabbage, Napa cabbage. And you always get a little serving of that if you go to a Korean restaurant with the beef or the chicken or whatever you're going to eat. So then she found this YouTube that got like 3 million hits or something of this woman who was very energetic and fun to watch, you know. And so then you realize that even the process of learning about cooking on YouTube is actually a pretty fun process.
Yeah.
These people are amazing and some of them are really funny.
Yeah, so I agree. So I actually, you know, I've been pretty boring most of the time, but I'm like adding more because it's like, you know, I've read a bunch of times that, you know, the more colorful your meals are, like actual color wise, the better it is for you. So this past week, I mean, I just made for breakfast, I made some eggs with some grass fed beef and then onions and all minced peppers of green, red and yellow, some jalapenos that cut up and some I put on some pico de gallo too.
It's great.
Yeah, it's been a lot of things like making my own. I learned how to make my own mayonnaise, which was really cool. And that turned into like, and it was like, oh, I didn't realize mayonnaise could be healthy or a similar form of mayonnaise could be healthy. And it's just take an egg and some olive oil and some lemon juice and some mustard powder. And then I've added in garlic cloves. Oh, I had garlic in that this morning too. Some avocado to make some avocado spread. I've just been looking up how to make like, so I guess it was more like an aioli sauce. I've been looking up to make like some chipotle aioli. Something that I'm really excited about because I had kombucha tea for the first time yesterday.
Oh, right.
And so I got on Amazon, I spent like $70 to start making my own kombucha tea. So I got like this gallon jug and it kind of goes along with the soda thing. Like it's the fizzy drink, like kombucha is so good for you and it tastes so good and you feel so good after you get done drinking it. That's like, man, this can't be good for me, but it is. So it's like $3 a bottle though. I better start making my own. And so that's my plan. So I've made so much stuff, but usually like I eat a lot of salads, like so a lot of vegetable or a lot of like I've done kale, which I've heard mixed things about kale too. Like some people say it's only good if you cook it, but I've eaten it raw. But I've eaten a lot of lettuce. I've done a lot of lettuce wraps, not because like it's not that lettuce has a ton of nutrients, but it's just I want to eat different types of vegetables. Like I don't want to get stuck in the same only eating this every day. Like that gets boring fast. But I've kind of been just doing my own stir fry, honestly. Like if I get like what I like is I just get the grass fed meat and some egg and I just let it cook in that, like egg and grass fed meat fat. So good fats, or even like some ghee. And that's how I've been cooking. I like doing kind of like my own little stir fry. That's been what I've really been on a kick for. And then I'll just put it on with some other vegetables and I'll fry it all up and then eat it and I feel great. And then I've been making these, I got a Vitamix too. So I've been making these fruit smoothies. So I just get some frozen berries and strawberries and then put a banana in it and some lemon and lime juice. And I have some hemp protein too, which, is only hemp protein, which tastes awful, but when you put it in with all the fruits, it's pretty good and it's got some good nutritional value. So it's been a fun, rewarding experience. Like it's been, like I said, at first it was kind of a struggle because I couldn't think clearly, but now it's like I feel like it's so crazy. Like I feel like when I was a kid, And I, you know, I was diagnosed with ADD, and then I would take Adderall or Ritalin and I could focus. But now it's like I have a similar focus of mental clarity, but it's all natural. Like, it's not like I still feel like me. I don't feel like a zombie. So it kind of makes me wonder, like, man, if I'd been eating like this when I was younger, which, you know, we didn't really, I mean, we've been lied to about nutrition so many times. So it's not like I can fault my mom or anybody else, but, you know, man, I wonder how much better I would have been back then. And it's all like, I mean, it's, you know, my advice for people is, you know, start eating healthy right away. Like, because healthy eating, it just affects you in every area of your life. Because like we were saying earlier, it's fuel. There's so much bad shit in convenient food. Like, you don't even realize it until you remove it from your body. And then you're like, wow, I feel amazing.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of stir fries too, and partly because it's just really practical. In other words, like,
yeah,
that's the thing. Like, you mentioned willpower, that, and I think that's a very important topic within the Maslow pyramid and also within diet, because and there's been some psychology. There's been a lot of study of willpower recently. And it turns out that, as you say, it's not unlimited, that we actually get there's only a certain amount that we have. And if you exhaust that, then you basically break down. You know, like, you can't just drum up another serving of willpower late in the day, kind of. And so, therefore, we have to, like, look at willpower kind of like money.
Yeah.
Or water in the desert might be even a better one, that you really have to apply it carefully. And so, and realize that if you do something, you need to invest your willpower such that it changes your habits. And then once it's a habit, then it doesn't require so much willpower to continue doing it. You know, kind of like brushing your teeth or things we take for granted. So once you get in the habit of cooking, then pretty soon, if you could keep at it for a couple, you know, weeks or months, then it's it becomes sort of like second nature, and you don't think like, oh wow, this is such a drag, I really don't feel like it. You just sort of get used to the process, and you go, well, and for me, the key issue is you got to have some backup things that are very easy for you to do, so that when you go, God, I'm so tired, you know, I don't even feel like cooking, and then you can say, okay, I can do this in 15 minutes. Yeah. Then you go, okay, can I, 15 minutes? Yeah, I can do that, right? So then you chop up some stuff, throw it in the wok or your pan, stir fry, you know, and then like, bang, you made a meal, and it didn't require an hour and a half of willpower. It only required 15 minutes, and that's manageable. So, you know, we have to, I think my point is, it's important to understand we have to invest our willpower prudently and choose practical ways that help us form better habits. And if we can do that, that's kind of the key to improving our whole Maslow triangle.
Yeah, because your habits are going to guide you. Like, that's the thing. Once you have good habits, it's like, it's not even, it's not work really anymore, because it's more of a subconscious thing. It's not, I have to consciously do this right now.
That's right.
And that's like, so like preparing vegetables or anything like that, at first it's a drag, and then you get used to it and you're like, yeah, this isn't too bad. I can do this in my sleep now. It's like, but at first it's like, man, I don't want to cut those up. It takes so much time. I don't really know what I'm doing. And so it's, but it's also like really just, it's like I said, it's just rewarding. It's just something that's like, man, I know this is good what I'm doing. Like, this feels good. Like, it gives you a really good feeling when you make your own food. So, but yeah, there's a good book that I'm reading too, for anybody that, wants more information. Like, I've been reading this book called It Starts With Food. It's a pretty good book. It's written by Dallas and Melissa Hartwig. But before you buy that book, you should really get a job, build a real career, Defy a Bewildering Economy, and many other of Charles Hugh Smith's books. Go to his website, read his blog posts. If you don't have an RSS feed reader, that's how I do it. If you have an iPad or Android device, use Feedly. Feedly is great. You can read him on Zero Hedge as well. He also writes in Peak Prosperity. And you write in other stuff too, right, Charles? So much
stuff.
Yeah,
I think you might see my stuff on Max Kaiser's site, Washington's blog, Financial Sense. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people have permission to reprint my stuff. So, but thank you for the pitch.
And, yeah, always.
It's been great. It's been great talking about Maslow and food, and there's more to say on Maslow and food. But I congratulate you, and you're my hero for changing your diet so radically and getting in there in the kitchen. So
thanks, Charles. I mean, having friends like you help for sure. I'm next time I have you on, we got you. For anybody that doesn't know, like Charles just wrote some really. If you're wondering why oil prices are dropping and gas prices are dropping and you're kind of trying to figure it out, Charles has written you've written five blog posts about it. You did a really good podcast with Gordon T. Long about it as well. So check that out, everybody. I still want to talk to you about some other stuff too, Charles, but I think we're getting to time to wrap it up. We'll have to have you on again soon in mid-January. We'll have to not have such a long break. I'll have to not reschedule on you like I did this past time. So, but thanks for coming on. Follow him on Twitter. It is C-H, I feel like it's, what is it? C-H Smith. And then there's a one for Smith. So C-H Smith and it's a one for Smith. So follow him on Twitter. Subscribe to his blog page. Is there anything else you want to plug, Charles?
No, that's it. Uptwominds.com. You can go there and follow whatever you can find of interest.
Sounds good. Well, everybody, thanks again for tuning in, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. Thank you very much, Drew. My pleasure.
You're welcome.